This episode of El Paso Primetime originally aired September 10th, 2011.
Knit one, purl two. Or is it purl two, knit one? I'm Florence Schwann, and my guest on El Paso Primetime is the proprietor of Maya Luna Yarns, Barbara Upsell. Welcome, Barbara, to El Paso Primetime.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have you. Recently, I walked into your shop in Placita, Santa Fe on Doniphan in the Upper Valley, and it was like walking into a rainbow. Listeners, from floor to ceiling were the most incredible colors that lured me over to touch. I think it was a case of yarn seduction, which I guess happens every so often. Barbara, now I know you opened the shop last spring, but knitting has always been a part of your life, hasn't it, beginning back in the Midwest?
It sure has. I grew up in Wisconsin, so we spent a lot of time indoors. And
I understand. Cold.
Yes, I learned to knit, crochet, and I've done an awful lot of sewing throughout my whole life. And so this has brought me back to knitting, which is very good.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you learn so much if you start doing those things when you're young. So if you've learned to knit or crochet when you're of a younger age, one can always go back to it years later, right? Oh, tell me yes, because that's what I want to do.
Yes, you most definitely can, because you've already learned your motor skills and your fingers, which is very important. And also, if you've played a musical instrument as a child. And it's very easy to go back. There's so many more knitting books now and places of instruction, knitting guilds, clubs. Very easy to go back.
Oh, my word. I hadn't thought about it being motor skills that I needed, but I played the piano, too, when I was young. So yarn and needles or hooks can be a lifelong endeavor or enjoyment.
Yes, and you can never run out of things to learn.
I think I'm finding that out, and it's wonderful. Knitting history is fascinating. I guess the earliest known pieces are the sandal socks that were made by creating knots and loops to make a kind of a fabric that looks something like knitting or crochet. And that was way back in the 3rd or to the 5th centuries.
Yes, that was, I believe it was a Swedish technique called nail binding.
Is that how you pronounce that?
Well,
nail binding?
I'm guessing.
Uh-huh.
It's done with a needle, a very large needle. And it doesn't ravel as much, but if you're not a master of it, they say that it ends up to be pretty much of a mess. The knitting actually showed up later.
Oh, I think that it was the trade routes in the Mediterranean that first spread those knitting skills from the Middle East to Europe. I understand there were some fragments that have been found in Egypt that date back to the 11th and the 14th centuries?
Yes, I think around the year 1000, they said there's some Coptic Egyptian socks. They're red and they're bifurcated, which means there's two places for your toes, and they seem to be equally spread. So I'm guessing their sandals, in their sandals, the thong must be sort of in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did have, I'm digging back to my art history background, and they did have kind of like thong sandals.
And that was the first one that was actually had knit stitches that looked like the knit stitches, and they were made in the round. And currently people have come back with websites and made patterns that copy those exact socks that were found.
Oh, my goodness. Nothing's new under the sun. If you are just joining us, my guest is Barbara Upsell, proprietor of Maya Luna Yarns, located in Placita, Santa Fe in the Upper Valley. And we are talking about knitting and how this skill has become so popular today. By the 14th century, we begin to see some paintings of people knitting, even some of the Virgin Mary.
Yes, I think by that time, a lot of people were using knitting to supplant their incomes because knitted goods were actually only used by the royalty and wealthy people. And And so knitting got to be very popular.
Yeah. In fact, I think it was Cosimo de' Medici in Florence, whose wife was buried in the mid-16th century. And she had on lacy red knitted silk stockings.
Wow. And back then when they were making those, they weren't just 5 stitches per inch. They were more like 30 stitches per inch.
Oh, really?
So imagine the work involved in one of those.
I just can't imagine. And these were evidently described as lace knitting, which would have been even more intricate.
Yes, and the dress of the day was even for men to wear the very, very long tights with tunics.
Right. That's so, right. They had those, like those pants that came to the knee or a little bit past the knee, too, later. And
yes.
They needed stockings, right?
Yes, and they would stretch and... So the wealthy had them, and they needed a lot of people to make them. So that's when knitting spread.
So in order to supply the aristocracy, so to speak, with these kinds of materials, I guess they eventually set up knitting schools?
Yes.
Great Britain, maybe?
Yes, and probably all through Europe. There was in Manchester... England, actually, there was quite a bit of textile production.
Mm-hmm. There was.
And because of the weather was colder up there, there were an awful lot of knitters and suppliers. Cotton was readily available, and they also imported a lot of cotton.
As well as wool, well, I'm sure, at the time period, because they would have been... the villagers would have been paid so much a bale for wool, and they would go to markets. Can you imagine those medieval markets with selling off, and so you had enough to knit?
Yes, yes, and whole families would knit.
That was by the 17th and 18th centuries, right?
Yes, the boys going out to watch the sheep flocks would be sitting and knitting. The women would be sitting at home knitting.
Because there was a market, and that was one way to earn money.
Yes.
So everybody knitted. Even different parts of the world began to develop specialty kinds of knitting. How about Scotland and the Fair Isle people?
Yes, because they were mainly fishermen, and they needed something quite warm. They didn't take all the oils out of their wool, and they made Aran and Shetland sweaters.
And that oil helped to keep them warm?
Well, and...
And keep the wetness off?
Keep the wetness off, yes.
Now, you got to picture this. It's cold there.
Yeah.
And the fishermen are out and, you know, in the weather.
Yes, and... the types of stitches they did were sometimes kind of thick, the cables and bobbles, mm-hmm. and that would just provide extra insulation to trap the air to keep them extra warm.
Oh, so. Long before any other type of keeping people warm. And some of those patterns are just gorgeous. Are they very difficult to make, Barbara?
No, you have to count. That's like...
Oh, I knew there'd be math in here somewhere.
But from all over the world, not just the Shetlands, the Fair Isle, there's Estonian lace, Portuguese knitting, the Catalonian Spanish lace, Bohas knitting from Sweden. So
so what is Bohas knitting? What's it like? What does it look like?
Well, it is knitting with... Two colors at once,
uh-huh.
and if you've seen the sweaters with kind of the rounded
uh-huh.
collar design,
uh-huh.
that's Bohas knitting, and I believe it was Erika Johansson from Sweden that developed this school of knitting, the Bohas, and employed at one time in 1947, there were up to 870 people doing this kind of knitting. To supplant their incomes.
Oh, my goodness. So knitting is like a home cottage industry or that can be in order to create these things. Yeah. And you don't think about that when you go to the store and you buy a beautiful hand-knitted piece. You don't think about somebody sitting in their home doing these things. But what happened to change home activities in the past into commercial endeavors?
Well, the Industrial Revolution was the main answer. When the cotton gin was developed and spinning machines and even the first knitting machine.
That was in England, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was a clergyman, and I have his
oh,
name
really?
Written down here somewhere. He developed the first knitting machine, and where people were going to work in the factories, and so it just dropped off. The hand knitting wasn't as important until later in the war years.
And the war years, you're talking about World War II?
Mm-hmm.
World War II. And what happened at that time period?
Well, wool was a lot harder to come by. So,
oh, yeah, because uniforms would have been made out of wool, and we had a lot of people under arms at that time.
Yeah, there were big campaigns out there to mend, darn, remake, and to try and save the wool. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, also during that time, there was a lot of research and development into new fibers, such as fibers made from peanuts and from milk. So,
fiber from milk? How do you do that? I'm curious. I guess that's something we need to find out, huh?
Well, a lot of the vegetable fibers and plant fibers are made the same way. What they do is dehydrate it, skim uh-huh. the fat. So what you have basically left is the casein uh-huh. or caseins.
Oh,
the proteins.
Yeah, the protein?
Yes, and they add a chemical that's used in to make acrylic just for durability, yes.
A binder?
And so it's kind of a sludge, and then what they do is they extrude it through a spinneter, and that process is kind of like making pasta.
Oh, my word.
So it's the same concept as making spaghetti noodles.
Uh-huh.
And a manufacturer or a buyer can specify a certain diameter or a certain length of each filament, which they're probably pretty short and pretty skinny.
So maybe, what, 2 inches? Or
not even.
Or
and
not
then,
even.
And then
mm-hmm.
they can be spun into a yarn. And right now there's bamboo, milk, peanut, corn, soy.
I think I have some yarn at home that comes from shells, seashells, right?
Chitin.
Uh-huh. That's
yes.
what it is.
Ground up crab and shrimp shells.
It's beautiful yarn.
Yeah. Well, it's combined with something else also, uh-huh. soy and wool, but mm-hmm. that helps make it antibacterial. But a lot of the research was done in the 40s, and mm-hmm. then it was just kind of shelved because knitting fell in its popularity.
Well, it was too easy to go to the store. And also, we were becoming very much a society in which we went to the store, bought things. We wanted them already done. Remember? Cake yeah. mixes came out at that time, too.
Yes, yes. It was. And women, you know, were entering the job market, too, and
right.
focused on their careers. And people thought it was kind of something that grandma did.
So. Oh, and that's changed. That's changed so much, hasn't it? There's a revival now of young women knitting, children knitting, males knitting. Back to the people that knitted first, right?
Yes, yes.
Men knitted first.
It was their occupation, and they had guilds in Europe and apprenticeships where you had to study and work very hard and graduate and prove yourself.
As a knitter.
Yes, back then. That was probably pretty much done up till 1900 even.
Oh, so, really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in some parts of the world.
I can imagine. I used to work at the Smithsonian's Renwick Museum, and it's about the crafts that people do. And we had quite a collection of different types of handwork work and things like that. So not far from knitting here. To get myself ready for this conversation, I went to the Internet. Now, if that isn't modern, talking about knitting, and was astounded. There are blogs, there are free patterns. You told me about one in particular, Ravelry.com.
Yes.
Uh-oh. It's something else.
Oh, it's dangerous. They have, as of last November, they have 1 million members worldwide. They have patterns in every language. They have more groups than you can even imagine. You can look up yarns and see what other people did with that yarn. You can look up the pattern and see what people did with a certain pattern in different yarns.
And they show pictures. People yes. proudly display what they're doing.
There is, in doing some research myself this last week, I've learned quite a bit about knitting. I even saw one group called Walking Men Who Like to Knit at the Same Time and Sing Sea Shanties.
Uh-oh. So.
It's true, and they have about 40 members, I think. So
isn't that something? I just, be forewarned, if you want to go to this website, it's ravelry.com. And if you sign yourself in, that's your name. So be forewarned. Think about what you might want to make your name to be.
Yes, yes. I am actually Cocoa Puff.
Cocoa Puff.
I'm anxious. I was so anxious to get on that I just named it after our kitty and can't change it now.
Oh. Well, I'm Rainbow Threads.
Well, I'll have to write that down.
So, but I'm just lurking. It was interesting. I found a pattern that I really liked and then discovered it was in Swedish. So that took care of that for me.
Yeah.
I found on that a podcast by a mother-son team. They were so interesting. Mom Abby is in New York, and her son Ben is somewhere in college, and they've named their blogcast Knit Knit Cafe. And I listened to one of them where they were talking with each other about knitting and about him knitting in his college classes. Does that happen very often? I mean, somehow I haven't gotten to where I knit in front of people.
Oh.
Or take it, you know, I might take it with me in the car.
Well,
when I'm not driving.
I take my knitting with me everywhere. And more and more I see other people knitting while in doctor's offices, in classes. I would think it'd be good because it's kind of calming and it helps you concentrate and focus.
Mm-hmm. So I do see
people knitting and crocheting all over. Of course, I say knitting all the time, but I mean knitting, crochet, mm-hmm. Embroidery, cross stitch.
I learned to crochet as a child. My mother was left-handed, so I had to sit in front of her and figure out everything backwards,
oh.
which was interesting. But then I just kind of taught myself to begin with until last year. A little bit about knitting, and I took a Ollie class last year, six classes.
Oh,
on
great!
Knitting. But on the internet, I found this designer, Stephen West. I think he's in Amsterdam, but I'm going to have to try to make one of his free patterns. It's a shawl that can be made into a capelet. So I'll be coming in to see what you can do with helping me choose some yarn.
Wonderful.
But men. My point being that men are really into this, aren't they? There was a book on your knitting table that caught my eye. What was that book, Barbara?
It's called Men Who Knit and the Dogs Who Love Them. And that was probably one of the first books I got for the shop because I just thought it looked neat. They had a lot of great men's patterns and dog coat patterns. And so far, we don't have a lot of men knitters. I have some men from Las Cruces that come in and knit. And actually, on opening weekend, when I was at La Buena Vida Alpaca Ranch, we had, it was about the opening weekend, I had a lot of needles spread out on the kitchen island. And we had a homeschool group with some teachers and parents and all the kids. And when I came back out into the kitchen, here was this young man, about 30 years old, with all the women gathered around him saying, well, what's this? Well, what's this? And he was going through all the tools of the trade, explaining what they were used for, and even a Tunisian crochet hook, and explaining how that differs from a regular crochet hook.
How does it differ?
Well, in regular crochet, you usually end up with one loop left on your crochet hook, and you can work more free-form patterns. With Tunisian crochet, you go across a row, and as you go from the right to the left, you end up with all your stitches on the row, and then the next row, they all come back off.
Oh, so that's like an Afghan stitch, isn't it?
It is called an Afghan needle.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know it was Tunisian.
Yes.
Barbara, that reminds me, I just called it a knitting table that you have, and it's like a dining room table. What would you call it, and what happens there?
Well, that's, I had a smaller table before, and I knew I needed something bigger. So, yes, there is a 9-foot table. I have 21 places to sit in the shop because knitting is about community. People like to get together, get to know each other. It's be confident and have self-esteem and have make things for themselves. So it's a very social hobby or skill or art.
So maybe we should call it a friend-making table.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know. So you just talked about that it's kind of perhaps calms the spirit. It is meditative, isn't it?
Yes. Studies have found that it is very helpful with depressed patients and even people with PTSD. On Ravelry, there's a group of men who've knit in combat and in combat zones, there's that group, and they have also found there's a professor in Detroit, and some studies that are going on in Britain right now and put into practice that children that are taught to knit at an early age in the classrooms have better behavior. It helps them with ADHD, and they don't play with their phones as much, and it really helps them with their math skills.
Yeah, math. We need to talk about that in a second. But it's really used as well as in physical therapy, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah. People with arthritis can get to feeling better. You have more mobility.
Mm-hmm. If you continuously do it. You don't want to do it and then quit.
No.
Right?
I even had a woman as a student, and she was in an accident where her fingers got bent backward and were badly deformed.
Mm-hmm.
And she would show up every week and knit. She made beautiful things.
So now let's talk about that math a minute. It's good for your brain work, isn't it? Taking measurements, getting the math right, concentrating on the instructions, and even charting your own patterns. So this could make math fun.
Oh, well, math is already fun.
Well, that's because you're a math person, right?
Yeah, yeah, but it does. If you're going to make your own designs, math is good to know. And we teach it there at the yarn shop. We teach people how to grow in their knitting. And if they haven't, if they've only followed patterns, we teach them to expand and make changes in the patterns according to their own likes and dislikes. So math is very important.
So this is brain exercise.
Mm-hmm. Well,
mm-hmm. In a fun way.
In a fun way, yes.
Yeah, it's important to exercise your brain. I've even discovered that there's some knitting websites about knitters and poetry, which was really a surprise to me, linking the idea of rhythmic words with stitches. And so that was another thing.
Wow.
As well as knitting for charities, Project Lioness, making the blankets, or those extraordinary caps for people with cancer.
Yes, there's hundreds of charity websites, knitting squares for to be combined into blankets for people in Africa. Well, In looking at it, I found this past week a list of hundreds of different charities that would love to have people knit and crochet for them. Oh. And here in El Paso, we have Project Linus and Humble Hearts, and both of them make blankets for children in the hospital.
I have a granddaughter that got a Linus blanket years ago, and she still has it. She's a teenager now. It came at a very troubling time when she was in the hospital, uh-huh. and it was very important to her. But there's something else that's kind of happening. It's called what? Yarn bombing?
Oh, it's modern graffiti. It's getting very popular. I think it started maybe around 2005 with a woman in Houston who she ran a boutique and was getting bored one day, and so she knit a little door handle cozy, which is mm-hmm. which is a cover for her door handle. And one thing led to another. Pretty soon she was making making covers for trees and doing artwork, and now it's gotten to the point where it is truly an art. One woman did cover the big bull that is on Wall Street.
On Wall Street?
Yes, she went during the night. She had her knitting all ready together, and she covered it, stitched it all together, and in the morning everybody woke to a pink and purple raging bull.
Can you imagine that picture? Talk about something that we talked to earlier, the fastest knitter.
Oh, 118 stitches per minute, and that would be Miriam Tegels of Holland. And she can knit and talk, actually.
That's a goal. I want to knit. I don't want to do the fastness. I just want to be able to talk while I'm knitting.
I saw her on a YouTube video, and it was hilarious because she was talking to the camera and looking at the camera while she was knitting so quickly.
Yeah, knitting and talking. That's a biggie if there ever was one. I didn't mention this before, but suppose someone wants to explore possibilities and wants to learn how to or wants to take lessons. They can visit you at Maya Luna Yarns at, what's the address there?
It is 5024 Donovan, suite number 10. It's with the one with the orange door.
Orange door, okay.
And
and they can call?
Yes, the number is 915-585-7779. And we have an open door policy. Come in with any of your problems, knitting or otherwise. Come in for classes. There's plenty of seats, and plenty of people just come in to spend time knitting and make new friends.
And what are those hours there?
Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 5, or if you call, I'll wait until you get there.
Thank you so much, Barbara Upsall, for your expertise, enthusiasm, and spreading the joy of knitting. And thanks to Dennis Wu, our producer for El Paso Primetime, who you might find around Barbara's knitting table making a sweater for Xena, his pet fox terrier. I'm Florence Schwein. Now, in a hurry to get started on that shawl, but it's not going to be at 118 stitches a minute. It's more like 5.
This episode of El Paso Primetime originally aired on September 10th, 2011. Thanks for listening to El Paso Primetime, a production of KTEP. Louis Signs and Perspectives is up next. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for listening to Primetime.